how do I know whether or not I'm prepared enough for what's next? Failure is not fatal. And I think that's where a lot of the anxiety that young adults tend to feel about this comes from, is that they imagine all of these, you know, big complicated things that they have to figure out. And then they imagine, if I'm not able to figure them out, and if I fail at something, then that's going to have catastrophic implications for my life.
The core understanding would be this: humans adapt. And if you want to move in the next phase of your life, if you want to be an adult, if you have that desire, you will do it.
Hello, and welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And we are very delighted to be back, especially since Jonathan and I just a couple of days ago got back from a convention in Illinois, the ICHE convention. If you happen to see us there and you're listening in, we're glad that you made it over here. It was a really fun convention. We really enjoyed getting to be there. It was a really well-run convention, and we enjoyed getting to talk with everybody in person, although the travel situation was a little bit more interesting, I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah, so travel situation for us this time was we got to drive, which meant that we didn't have to worry about stranded in an airport. Drive up was interesting, lots of rainstorms, few accidents, none of which came close to us or we were involved in, so it just delayed us.
Well, Jonathan, I think that if you can, we should mention very briefly what sort of vehicle we were in, if we can make it brief, because I know you have lots of thoughts
on it. Yeah, I just wasn't sure if you wanted to risk that or not, David. I was trying to not succumb to temptation, so... gentle listener, if you don't know this, I have a deep-seated pathological hatred towards new vehicles, and I've sort of solidified that as to anything manufactured after 2018. I have deep reasons for that, but mostly it's because they're full of superfluous junk that does not help you drive the car and actually gets in the way. And so we had a 2025 Jeep Grand Wagoneer, I think, which is literally as long as my E350 van, seats seven people, and has more buttons than the spaceship. But unlike the spaceship,
four
none of these
screens
buttons are actually useful.
In the front.
Yeah. No, four screens in the front and at least one in the back. A sunroof that's as long as the entire car that we didn't discover until halfway there. After David and I were done driving, I discovered it had a heads-up display. I've not discovered the missile lock yet. But what was particularly annoying to me was that it has a screen that is as bright as seven suns at night. And the dimmer switch for that screen is four touchscreens deep to fix. And, David, I've still not figured this out, the nighttime dimmer is locked. I cannot figure out how to unlock the nighttime dimmer. So you cannot adjust the screen at night, which means it's almost impossible to drive it at night.
Just
a few of the really annoying things about this thing. But we drove it up there. However, as a redeeming quality, it does have massage features in the seats, and we use that a fair amount both
that
ways.
Was pretty nice. Listen, it was a good consolation prize, if nothing else.
That's right. So got up there, no problem. Had the convention, awesome convention. On the way back, about an hour into the trip, I want to recount, if I can, David, the entire verbatim conversation that happened here.
Yep.
I think there was a noise. David said, what's that? And I said, I don't know. I didn't hit anything. He said, maybe it was inside the car. And about then, you know, one of the 97,000 warning systems in the car says tire pressure is like, you know, it flashes up and says it's 40, 30, 20, 10, 5. I was like, oh, we have a flat tire. Okay. I say, oh, we have a flat tire. We pull off the road, change the tire about 7 feet away from hurtling rigs at 80 miles an hour. Don't die. Get back in. And that's where the conversation resumes. I said, that was interesting. I said, we may not be a race pit crew, but that wasn't bad. And David said, that definitely was interesting. And that was the entire conversation when it came to changing the tire. So just so you know, David is fantastic co-host. He's a great IT guy. He's a fantastic marketer. And if you need to change the tire on the side of the road, he can do that almost telepathically. So change the tire. The spare made it the whole way back. And we still have the rental vehicle for the convention that we're going to this week. And we'll see what other new things we discover.
Yeah, we'll check in with you all next week for our next episode and see what the current status is of that vehicle and if we've discovered any new features on it.
Yeah, so this has airbags in it, so it lifts 6 inches. It's like a programmable 6-inch lift that you can put into this thing. And then at some point, David, I pushed the wrong buttons and completely changed the dash display, so I can't get back to the old one before. I have no idea where it went. It's completely rearranged. And so anyhow, a little bit of a we could do a whole podcast. David will never let us do a whole podcast on the evils of new cars. But
Jonathan has asked me multiple times if we could do that episode, and every time I'm like, I don't think that
it's on my list of suggested episodes. For some reason, it keeps getting vetoed by the people smarter than me.
So. Yeah, listeners, if you want to hear that, you can let us know, and we'll potentially
we could do a series. We could launch a whole other podcast, David.
Oh my. Okay. I think we should get to the actual topic of the podcast.
Oh, we're gonna talk about something else today? Darn, yeah, I'm all warmed up for this one. What question are we considering today, David?
So this question, I think, is one that has come up time and time again, especially, Jonathan, you mentioned in the Navigate course that we teach for young adult students about how to make wise decisions and kind of find a direction in life. And this question is about kind of preparedness or readiness. And so just the question is, how do I know whether or not I'm prepared enough for what's next? And this is something that we run into a lot, as is a just extremely common, source of anxiety for young adults who, especially if they are in high school or approaching high school graduation, and they are, seeing the approaching deadline of, after I finish high school, now I have to figure out whether or not I'm going to go to college. I have to figure out what sort of career I'm interested in, potentially like picking a major, and especially thanks to the traditional education. It feels like, at age 18, then they have to lock in exactly what they're going to do for the rest of their life. And they feel a lot of pressure about that. And so then there's just all these other things where they're going, like, how in the world do I know whether I'm prepared to actually be ready to enter in this new stage of life?
Well, the answer is simple, David. The question is, how do I know if I'm prepared for the rest of my life? And the answer is, do you own a car that is older than 2018? If so, you're probably well prepared. And if not, you're in an entirely different situation and you're really in a mess. No, on a more serious note, first of all, I think that it's always worth acknowledging, if you're a young person listening to this, or if you're a not young person and you're helping your young person through this, that this is a normal question. And asking it is evidence that somebody's paying attention, right? So in other words, it's a good question to ask, and it's a reasonable question to ask. And it's worth, I think, backing up and taking a look at the overall kind of historical perspective here. I think the reason that this question is so difficult at the moment is, like, let's just go back a generation or two or three. And then, we go back a generation or two or three, which means we're still in living memory. Then we're looking at all the generations before, and here's what the situation looks like. The situation looks like, by the time you're 15, 16, 17, or 18, you have made some career choices that will be quasi-permanent, and that's normal. And so, if you want to go back even a couple of generations, let's go back into, say, the 1800s or even early 1900s. Let's go back to the 1800s. At that point, where you were born was going to determine a lot of what's going to happen next, right? And so, are you going to go to college? Probably not. If you are going to college, you have three tracks available to you: medicine, law, and business of some kind. Are you born into a house that is a merchant house? Then you're going to be a merchant. If you were born into a farming household, which is typically going to do to become a farmer, will you apprentice out at some point, or are you going to go away to sea? And that's not all the options, but it's pretty close to all the options. And so now come forward post-industrial revolution, and now you have a quick bifurcation. Are you going to graduate from high school and go to work? There's a company town, there's a company in your town. You're getting on with that company, and the expectation is you will stay in that company or stay in that industry until you retire. Or are you going to go to college? If you're going to go to college, you're going to get a degree. You're going to trade that degree and go to work for a job. You're going to stay in that job or in that industry until you retire. And that's within living memory. And so in those situations, then it being able to make a decision at 16, 17, 18, or 19, 20, 21, 22 about where you were going to generally be for the rest of your life was not only possible, it was somewhat reasonable and expected. And there is enough lingering cultural memory that when that's not the case and you have young people coming up and going, oh, I'm not sure, then the first reaction, I think, is this sort of almost genetic memory of panic. Like, oh, I don't know what to do. And that puts me in a really unique situation. And what I want to do is I want to kind of flip that and say, it does. And so it's not unusual to not know what you're going to do. What's unusual is that we live in a time and place where we have so many options, and those options can be adjusted as you go forward. And that's a very, from my perspective, that's a very positive thing. That's a very exciting thing. That's a very freeing thing. But it is different, and people often don't get to the positive part of that because they get stumped in the negative part. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely does. And
traditional education doesn't work for everyone. If you or your student wants something different, check out Ascend by Unbound. With flexible courses, real-world projects, mentorship, and community, Ascend equips young adults to thrive academically, professionally, and personally. Students consistently say that the close-knit support and resume-ready experience are their favorite parts. Enrollment prices rise soon, so don't wait. Find your track at beunbound.us/ascend.
I was just trying to think of examples that we have, because I think you can definitely find them, of people who later in their life have ended up pivoting careers. And so, like, that's, I think, an easy thing to think of, as far as just like the trap ends up feeling like I have to lock in exactly what I'm going to do. But, there's quite a few examples of people who have, pivoted in their careers late in life. And so I think, for example, the guy who actually founded and was a significant figure founding McDonald's, actually, as the one that just came to mind. He ended up doing that when he was 52, actually. For another example, like some of the great inventors like Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Edison were kind of into their kind of middle years of life as well, when they made some of their more notable discoveries and had done a lot of other things before actually being in the position where they did the things that they are known for. But I almost wonder, though, if this could even be broadened a little bit, because I think we tend to think of this most of the time in terms of career and thinking about like being ready for a specific career. I think that I have seen young adults who at this point are just even more even concerned if they just have the skills that they need for just everyday adult life, and if they are prepared for the responsibilities and tackling like the new problems that will come up in just everyday life, whether that's figuring out how to make a significant purchase, like a place to live or a vehicle or something like that, or like how to fix something in your house or your vehicle when it goes wrong or anything like that. And I think there tends to be a lot more of fear of, I don't know whether or not I'm going to actually be able to handle this, even some of those things at this point. And so I'm wondering if we could even kind of broaden the definition of this even a little bit further.
Yeah, I think actually, first of all, I think it's a good broadening, but I also think it's very similarly related. So I think we get this question a lot, and we get concerned people a lot, and there's a little bit of a puzzle here. And let me unpack the puzzle a little bit. And I think as you look back, it is related to the same thing we talked about with careers. I think in the past, there was an understanding that there was a couple of categories, right? I would own a home. It had several fairly simple systems: plumbing, electricity, shelter. I would run a car. It had it had simple systems. And my, the kind of paperwork that went with running a household was delivered through the mail. It acted fairly slow, and it was fairly simple systems. And so you look at that and you go, I might be good at two out of those three, maybe not three out of those three, but I can figure those things out. And there's a way to kind of understand them. And there was this idea that, I would get apprenticed by my parents or, people in the neighborhood, something like that would be handed down. And, there's various commentators that say, that generational, passing the torch isn't there, maybe broken families or broken communities and all those kinds of things. But I actually think there's something different going on here. I don't know that that's really changed, but the perception has changed because the amount of information is so much more vast, right? I mean, like that now, like there's access to all this information. And so it feels like she should do 10,000 things. You know, we were on this car kick earlier. I could get really wound up about insurance. I recently had a car insurance fiasco. Now, I am a grown adult who has done reasonably well at maintaining my life. And yet, there was a communication that I missed with an insurance company that ended up having some real frustrating implications. And you go, well, how did you miss that communication? Well, because the stupid insurance company communicates with me through text, through notifications on their app, through email, and occasionally by mail. And in this particular case, they skipped all those things and sent me one singular letter. But they send me hundreds of letters. And so trying to sort through all that stuff and figure out that one that was important when most of the rest could be dismissed ended up being complicated. And I think that there's this perception that things are way more complicated and almost unknowable because it's so much more, you know, there's so many more communication streams. But, and here's the flip again, and, you know, we talked about jobs, it's like, yeah, but the excitement is there's all these potential possibilities. What's interesting now is that, you know, if your dad didn't teach you how to fix cars, you can get a car fixing university level degree from YouTube, meaning mm-hmm. that, you know, you can, I mean, I spend a lot of time fixing my car, you know, with YouTube in one hand and a wrench in the other, trying to figure out what it is. And so there's this enormous explosion of information that allows you to do that. And so then the question is, all right, why? Why do we have the problem then? And I don't want to oversimplify this, but I think it's kind of this paralysis by analysis. There's too many options. And so you have to sort of push aside the options, and you have to start with a core option or a core decision. And the core decision says, or the core understanding that leads to the decision, the core understanding would be this: humans adapt. And if you want to move in the next phase of your life, if you want to be an adult, if you have that desire, you will do it. I just taught our Live Navigate class last night, and I told the students, I said, look, you don't need Navigate to be an adult. You don't need what I'm saying to do that. In fact, all of you are coming from fairly solid families. It's unlikely you're going to get, you know, kicked out of the house and have to live under a bridge somewhere. If given the opportunity, you're probably hardworking people that has good ethics, and you'll show up on time, and, you know, you'll get your first job one way or the other, and you'll have to pay some bills, and you'll figure it out. So what's the point of taking Navigate? Well, you take Navigate because we can help you figure it out faster. You know, we can tell you some of the things that are happening underneath the surface. We can teach you some skills and some practical things to use, and we can bend the curve for you a little bit. But at the end of the day, let's not get confused and say, this is super secret information, and if you don't have this special course or you don't have this special information, you're going to fail as an adult. No, you're going to be fine as an adult as long as you care about being an adult. Now, how you navigate that can be easier or harder depending, but you'll make it either way. And it starts with that kind of decision going, I'm going to be an adult. And then maybe a second one, David, which is, it's good to be an adult. You know, mm-hmm. accepting full responsibility of your life is the point. And to do that is actually an inherently good thing.
Yeah. I think, especially the point about knowing that you have resources to be able to figure out a lot of things is even more helpful. I mean, the obvious other tool that is even more available now is AI. Like, you can ask it, especially if, you know, I've done this multiple times with my vehicle, just asked it a very specific thing, like, okay, for a 2014 Ford Focus, like, what is the, like, exact procedure for fixing or, you know, replacing this specific part? And it will give you, you know, pretty accurate answers most of the time that you should double check, but still, like, the tools that are available for that are really helpful. I think the other thing that you kind of struck at a little bit there that is really important is just the idea that failure is not fatal. And I think that's where a lot of the anxiety that young adults tend to feel about this comes from, is that they imagine all of these, you know, big complicated things that they have to figure out, and then they imagine, if I'm not able to figure them out and if I fail at something, then that's going to have catastrophic implications for my life. And most of the time, 99% of the time, that's not at all accurate. Like, if, you know, to your example, like, if there's like an insurance miscommunication or something like that, and you don't fully understand it, like, Jonathan, I'm sure that that was really frustrating and, you know, caused you a headache and was annoying to deal with and, you know, cost you a good bit of time and potentially some money. But you came out on the other side of it, like, you know, and it's not actually affecting your life at this point, is it?
No, that's correct. Other than I would say with a great deal of passion, friends don't let friends use Geico. But no, but that's actually a really good example, David. And that you know, I think there is this paralysis that's like, you know, if I fail, something's going to go wrong. Well, let me say, failing at car insurance can have some catastrophic responses in terms of, you know, and the way this whole thing played out is that they canceled my insurance for no reason. And it really literally was for no reason. And for reasons I still don't fully understand. Just to be clear, I've never wrecked a car. I paid all my premiums on time. Like I there was no reason to do this. And then they notified me with one letter that just sort of I missed in all the, you know, avalanche of stuff that we get. And so there was a period of time that there was no insurance. Now, there's implications to that, but, you know, God smiles on fools. And so those, none of those implications happened. And then it looked like it was going to be really difficult to get insurance. And then here's a kind of solid truth to pay attention to. I fixed that by calling an Unbound alum who happens to run an insurance company and was like, I need help. And he said, oh, you need to do this, this, and this. And we got this done. So relationships cover a lot of failure problems, right? And so, but the point is that this was a frustrating thing, but it was a survival thing. And to your point, David, for about 24 hours, it was extremely frustrating. And at the end, I actually saved a little money. So ironically, you know, and a lot of things do end up like that. But here's the thing, and we were talking about this in Navigate last night as well. I normally say it like this, you know, outside of some catastrophic problems, like if you make a decision, a poor decision about your driving ability and you wreck a car and you hurt yourself or others, that's got catastrophic long-term implications. If you make bad moral decisions, that can have long-term implications. Outside of those, almost everything is not only 100% recoverable, it's often to your advantage, right? If you, you know, and sometimes the example is like, you go to work for, you know, at a job, an entry-level job, and you hate it. Okay, you know, you then quit that job at the right time and you take that information and you do something else. You know, you move someplace and decide you don't like the town. Okay, well, you endure for a little while, you learn some new things, and then you move someplace else. You know, there's a lot of adjustments here, but there's a deeper thing here that's worth stating. I want to come back to that, you know, if you make some sort of catastrophic mistake or you make some sort of catastrophic moral mistake, let's remember, we're Christians. And as Christians, God extends grace to the worst and the least of these, right? In other words, God redeems even sin. God redeems even tragedy. And so even real failure, like catastrophic failure, like failure that hurts other people, failure that's deep, failure that's sin, you don't want to fail that way. But yet God promises not only grace for the sin part, but also redemption. Now, does that mean that, you know, it's okay, you don't have to worry about that? As Paul would say, you know, by no means, you know, we don't sin more that grace may abound more. And yet it's worth noting that at that fundamental level, so, you know, my guess is if you're not listening to this, you're not going, I wonder if I should catastrophically sin and screw something up in my life really bad. Like, that's not the question that's being asked here, right? The question is, I'm worried about failing at, okay, well, push that out. Failing at what? In a conversation last night, you know, a student was wondering about choosing to go on campus to a particular college. And so, you know, I said, well, let's push this out to its logical conclusions. The first question would be, are you going to be risking $3,000 or $50,000 or some variation of that? You know, if you're risking $50,000, are you in a position where you can risk $50,000? Most of us would say no. Are you in a position where you can risk $3,000? Most of us don't want to waste it, but we probably could. And so, you know, one thing that's for certain, if you go there and don't like it, you probably don't get your money back. Is that going to be catastrophic or not a big deal? The second thing is, you know, this person was worried about, I'm not sure if I'm going to fit in socially. Well, that's a legitimate question, right? But you can go, and if you fit in socially, you're fine. And if you don't fit in socially, you can leave. What's the worst that happens? You lose $3,000? Well, if that's the worst loss, then you can make that decision and say, like, I don't want to lose $3,000, but it's fine. But if your worst loss is $50,000, you say, I can't afford that. Well, that's a good way to inform your decision about doing something else. But even if you went and lost $50,000, that's not great, and we don't want to do that. And you might have to pay that off over a long period of time, but you will, and you will have learned something. And even that's not permanent. You know, I mean, like it's a very expensive mistake, but it's still a mistake that you can recover from. And almost all mistakes in our life are like that. Almost all failures in our life are like that. And sometimes it just takes pressing into them and asking that question. I think that there is a subtle but a significant attack against us that takes little fears and magnifies them in the shadows. And so you're being driven by a fear that you've not really looked at. And then when you pull that thing out and look at it, you go, oh, wait a second. That's not as big a deal as I think it was. thought it was. But it takes the courage to kind of grab that thing and jerk it out in the sunlight and go, ah, I'm not scared of you.
Yeah, there is a lot of wisdom in that, in the when we are especially feeling all of the anxiety about a particular thing or an issue that we're, you know, worried about something that's coming up, it feels so much bigger than it actually is in the long term. A friend of mine, you know, gave me this metric to think about it, where it was just if you ask the question, like, if this goes wrong, is it actually going to like affect your life 5 years from now?
And yeah, that's a great way to do that. Yep.
Thinking about it in that context, you know, like there's just so many things that you can look at that we will be worried about day in and day out. And you just go like, is this actually going to matter like in 5 years from now? You know, maybe if I mess it up, like it might be a fun story at that point. But the chances, even in your example of something like, you know, having the college decision and, you know, having the $50,000 being paid, like, yes, that is definitely going to be and may have significant implications for your life and financial opportunities. So like, we don't want to like, you know, minimize that. But at the same time, like, there's a lot of ways to make money at this point. Yeah, you know, we've talked a lot in our recent podcast episodes about like career opportunities and how you can do that. And so I think that if you look 5 years in the future, there is an extremely strong possibility that you can be out of, you know, $50,000 of in the hole if that's, you know, something that you're really dedicated and working towards. And here's the part that I think is really cool is that the chances that you learn some really, really valuable lessons that equip you to be able to take on some even greater challenges down the road because of those mistakes or because of that thing that went wrong is really high. And that's the cool part about us, you know, having a Christian faith and recognizing that God can redeem all things is that, you know, we can look at failures and go, yes, like, you know, that's not a good thing, but I know that God can work good from it and I can continue forward and press forward because I know that he still has a plan for me and I can learn from that. And so when we're able to pick ourselves back up and say, okay, well, how can I, you know, move on from this? What can I learn from this? What can I gain from this seeming loss at the time? There is so much potential and so much room for learning really, really valuable lessons that will equip you in ways that people who haven't necessarily messed up in the same ways will not fully understand or be equipped in that specific way.
And, you know, those mix of successes and failures are what makes up an interesting life. You know, an interesting life is generally not made up of total success. They don't exist for starters, but it's often the, you know, if we had driven home from Illinois and nothing had happened, we would be talking about it in the podcast, but it was a failure of a tire that created an interesting situation. It was annoying. It delayed us a little bit, but it provided that failure provided us a chance to do something different. Your friend will affect me in 5 years. I had a situation many, many years ago. I was in my probably mid to late 20s and I got a headache and I don't ever get a headache. And it was like at the top of my head, which was really weird. And it persisted like more than a day and then a couple of days. And so, you know, if you get a headache and you don't normally get a headache, it's a different part. David, what do you think you have immediately?
I mean, that sounds like, you know, some sort of like head injury or like some sort of like thing going wrong with your head. Like there's a billion different things that your brain can go to if you're, you know, thinking about that.
I guarantee most people will be like, it's a tumor. I have brain cancer. I'm going to die. Like, that's exactly what I thought, right? Like I was like, I'm going to orphan my kids and leave my wife, you know, a widow and all this kind of stuff. And so I actually went to the doctor and the doctors were like, okay, well, we'll do some tests. Like, and they were very careful. And so like you immediately, cause your brain's racing, you're like, I'm reading into all these things. Like, they just don't want to tell me. They just don't want to tell me. And so I did tests and they weren't coming back. And you know, now it's like 2 or 3 weeks, which is really kind of weird, long time. And a friend of mine's like, hey, call this friend of mine. He's a doctor. Just call him. And so I called this guy because I was desperate. And the guy's like, or on the phone. I never met him. I don't even remember his name. I never saw him, right? I never paid him either. I mean, he didn't want paid. And he said, let's start with death. And I was like, thank you. That's what I'm worried about. I'm not worried about a headache. I'm worried about having a brain tumor and dying, right? I mean, and so like, let's start with death. He said, and the thing that would most likely kill you is a brain tumor, and none of the things that you have match up with brain tumors. So, well, you know, nothing's never impossible. We're looking at like an almost impossibility of things. He said, now the next thing would be this, and the next thing would be this, the next thing would be this. Let me ask you a question. Did you have the flu recently? And I was like, yeah, about 3 weeks ago. He's like, okay, the flu manifests itself in sore muscles, and sometimes the virus can spread in interesting ways. And sometimes it can do a headache or some sort of muscle ache like this. He said, that's almost certainly what it is. And 3 weeks in, that means you probably have about 3 to 4 days left and you'll be fine. 3 to 4 days later, I was fine. Never had a headache like that again. But it wasn't, so that was great. I was glad for a happy ending. What I really appreciated though was the flood of relief when he said, let's start with death. and it was like, yes, that's what nobody's talking about. And I'm almost too scared to ask. You know, like the other doctors are like, they're not saying things and I'm like reading in, but I don't want to really ask in case they're like, yes, you have a brain tumor. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to ask that. And so again, that's that kind of pulling it out and looking at it and say, let's press this. I think your friend's question is fantastic. Will this impact your life in 5 years? And maybe the next question is, and will it impact it positively? You know, I mean, what happens if it goes right? But you know, the original question is, how do I know whether or not I'm prepared enough for what's next? And I want to say an answer, and I want this to be encouraging. The answer is you don't, because you don't know what's next. And there's this simple fact that can be a little bit of a terrifying thing when you first hear it, but work with me for a second here. There is a point when you become old enough to realize that the things that are beyond your control are bigger than the things that are in your control, and those things have a bigger impact on your life than everything else. In other words, there are things that you have no control over that is going to really drive the rest of your life. And so you say, well, that's really depressing and that's really scary and stuff like that. Well, it can be, but not for people who follow Christ. And when I say things beyond your control, it's interesting. When I say that, most people are like, you start to catastrophize, right? Like, what if I get a brain tumor? What if I have an accident? What if I, okay, yes, those things happen. What if you fall in love? What if you get a really great job opportunity? What if you have, like, in other words, you know, in your life, you might be surprised to find that the things that are outside of your control that are good are the things that actually end up defining your life. My life is defined by incredibly good things that I didn't see coming, and things that were good in ways that I didn't understand that now are the heart and soul of what makes my life awesome. And if you'd asked me 20, 30 years ago, you know, what my awesome life looked like, I didn't have enough imagination to describe the one I have now. And that's not because I live some little wild, adventurous, crazy life. It's because in many ways, my life from the outside probably doesn't look particularly interesting or particularly fascinating, but inside living it, it's amazing, right? And so those things that are outside of your control are bigger than you think. And so, how do I know whether or not I'm prepared? You don't, because you don't know what's coming. But here's the exciting part, and here's the part that is supposed to be comforting, and then I want to say that, is that, and you'll learn. That's the wonderful thing about being human, right? You will adapt, you will adjust to those things. But then there's one more step. How do I know whether I'm not prepared? I don't know if you'll know whether or not you're prepared, but you can prepare. And so to throw back on the career side, you know, in the past, I could pick one or two or three careers. Now I don't know which career to pick. Yeah, but all those careers are going to require you the ability to quickly and effectively master complicated information, which is a fancy way of saying all those careers will require you to be able to process and learn information fast. And so how do you prepare? By learning how to learn, but by training your curiosity, by knowing how to ask good questions. And then when it comes like, well, how will I know all these life skills and how will I know all these kinds of things? Well, it's by getting out there and doing new things and failing at something as fast as possible and realizing that you survived that and starting, but how do you prepare? Well, I started with this attitude that's like, I want to become an adult. I want to accept full responsibility for my life. I realize that I'm not going to get everything perfect as I do that and that failure is not fatal. You know, those are small things and yet they're fundamental, foundational things that if you prepare that way, you actually will be prepared for the rest of your life.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a great answer to that question. The only other couple of things I think I would pull out again from our conversation is, for one thing, the power of having community and connections to help you with those things is that there are going to be lots of times where you are not prepared enough to handle a specific situation, and then you can call up somebody or text somebody and be like, hey, I'm not entirely sure what the best way to go about this is. What do you think? I remember about a year ago, I got into like a weird situation where there was an accident that definitely was not my fault. But because there was nobody around to witness it, the police department decided that they would pin it on me instead of the other individual. And so I ended up actually calling Jonathan and be like, I'm not entirely sure what the best way to go about this is, and I haven't actually navigated traffic court in Virginia before, and so what's the best way to go about this? And he was able to give me some really helpful perspective, because he has had experience with some other people who have recently had experiences there, and was able to kind of point me in a good direction to be able to figure it out. And there's a ton of other examples in my life where I have not been entirely sure of how to figure something out, and you can have connections that will really, really be helpful for you there. And so if you have good family or friends or a church network that you can pull from to help you when you are in a situation where you're not prepared, that's a really good thing, not only because it's good for you to be able to have resources who can help you out, but it's also an opportunity for especially other Christians to practice being a blessing and giving out of the experience and the knowledge and the resources that they have to others. And then you can eventually turn around someday when you have those experiences and give that to somebody else. And that's one of the huge blessings of community, especially in light of the redemption of all things that we are promised by God.
Well, those are excellent things to end with. There's a few things in life that aren't solved by relationships. And so it's worth noting that. So as we wrap up here, maybe just a quick pointer to say that if you are thinking about being prepared and you're looking for those kinds of relationships, well, we might direct you to beunbound.us to learn more about what Unbound does. We do have phenomenal connections. You heard me say that when I was stuck with my insurance problem, I called an Unbound alumni. Thank you, Jordan, if you're listening. I'm still grateful every single time my insurance is there and working correctly and not Geico. And having those relationships end up being really important. Where you go and what you do and the decisions you make that put you in proximity to those relationships can be quite important, and Unbound can offer some solutions there. But we also might want to highlight our Equip and Explore programs. They're high school programs, and they actually are completely about teaching practical skills, the kinds of skills that prepare young adults to become fully responsible adults. And you can go to beunbound.us to learn more about those. Thanks for listening to us. Thanks for listening to us talk about vehicles, insurance companies that you should not buy, and being able to be prepared to become an adult. And we'll look forward to the next time that we're together. Until then, be unbound.